Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment.
All right, this is the MGB review of H2O Destiny with a special guest, the inspiration of the MGB Wrestling Podcast, Ryan from The Blade Job. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing great, Mason. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Yeah, you got a lot to answer for. There's a lot of podcasts that kind of have started because of you, and then you kind of spiraled out, and then that domino effect or the butterfly effect, I don't think it could be demonstrated better than one small throwaway comment that you made that I mentioned to Mason that started our podcast, that then started another podcast, and then another podcast, and then now there's hundreds of different podcasts that kind of all start from one little comment. It's amazing, but yeah, 3.5 years later, actually, I guess the speed that it happened as well, that's not that long a period of time.
No. It's 3.5 years. Because I never, like, I think about that sometimes, and it's such a strange thing to me, because you know me as well as anyone of my, you know, our Twitter group, the Seven, as we you know, lovingly call ourselves sometimes. I don't take myself too seriously. I really don't. I never have, because I'm just here to have fun. And I'm proud that so much kind of came out of this dinky little show, which has been picking up steam on YouTube for some reason. I do not understand why, but I've been getting a ton of views lately, and I have no idea why. And they're full views. They're not like 1 minute drop offs. They're, you know, 30 minutes in, 40 minutes in. I don't understand why. I think some of them are because of titles. I have a couple, as you remember, titles that spark a different interest than professional wrestling. You know, and intergender belly button does really well for some reason. And the 18th or 19th episode, Barely Legal, gets a lot of views. And I don't really understand that, but I think it's because the internet is full of terrible people.
I would hazard a guess. It wouldn't surprise me at all if it was a Melissa, a Mags, a Matt. I would have, if it was myself, I would have admitted it. But there's been times also when it's kind of like, man, I miss a Blade Job show. Like, I'm an audio person, though, so I don't really watch the YouTube. But when you said YouTube, would it be YouTube specifically? I'm thinking Melissa.
Yeah, I think that too sometimes, that sometimes people just put it on in the background just to get me off my butt to do something else again. And I do have a little tease. There is something that I'm considering doing that is very, very different from everything that Scott, Tim, John, rest in peace, and myself were doing, and Trash Can, of course. It's a very big departure, and it's going to take a lot of work. So I don't want to say too much, but there's something I'm kind of working on, more of a serious note.
Is that on top of the thing that you already shared with me, or is this something?
No. This is something very different. This is actually a conversation that was had between myself and another person during the main thing we're going to be talking about during this show.
Okay.
A conversation kind of came out of that about some human behavior and some potential mental wellness that goes into professional wrestling. And so it's something a little more dramatic from me than I usually do. But we'll see. We'll see. I got to make some calls.
Cause I was going to ask you then of how the other project was coming along. Cause I don't think I've talked to you about that in, well, here's my guess. I was going to say about 6 months, probably about 12 months then.
Things have changed a lot. The moving to a new house put a lot of things on hold. A lot of things. So I am about 6 months behind on everything.
Okay.
And my new work schedule in the real world is not as easy to get around because I'm just always working.
I know that there was going to be people who were going to listen to this episode once they realized that you're on it, so it would have been a miss not to at least ask for an update. So,
yes, there will be a yearly episode of The Blade Job. It will happen 100%. You will get a new episode this year. We're getting down
to the wire. There's not long left. We got like 7 weeks left, something like that.
It's yep. getting close. Oh, yeah.
All right, no. You heard it here first. There's going to be a new Blade Job show. Now, Mason, I'm not quite sure. We never discuss ahead of time our kind of where we're going to. I'm just looking at reading the first line of yours. So I think you're ahead of me. So I'm going to introduce a little bit. Now, we were talking off air just before you came on, Ryan, about H2O and kind of like the frequency of their matches. And I was telling Mason, I'm like, oh, they're really frequent. Like they'll often have a match each week. Because you were like, I wonder when the next one's going to be. And actually, the next one's like a month away. But in general, in case you didn't realize, Mason, they had three events this weekend. So we're going to talk about the third one of the three. But the first one was the Hustle Cup. So there was Austin Luke, Darian Hardaway, Adonis Valerio, Reed Walker. There was a Falls Count Anywhere barbed wire bunkhouse brawl match. I'm not sure what that is. Alex Stretch and Drew Blood. An H2O tag team match. Chris Bradley and Kristen Ross defeated the Extricated. Eddie Only defeated Frankie Picard. Ricky Shane Page, Atticus Cobra, and Eric Ryan defeated Ryan Redfield. And Adonis Valerio defeated Austin Luke, Darian Hardaway, and Reed Walker in the Hustle Cup final. Oh, that first one I mentioned, there was four single four-way matches to qualify for the final. I just didn't want to read them all out. So a lot of those names you're going to hear, I guess, in a little bit when we get to the main thing. Saturday, same thing. Tremont's Deathmatch Tournament. Marcus Mathis defeated Jimmy Lloyd. Tremont's Deathmatch Tournament first round. A four-way Bulldozers Barbed Wire Massacre Deathmatch. Just looking at the names on Cage Match make me kind of want to go back and go, what the heck is that? I need to know a little bit more. Brandon Kirk, Mitch Vallon, Bobby Beverly, Kennedy Copeland all won their first round matches. Greg Excellent and Jeff Cannonball defeated Eddie Only and Gregory Iron. I have a feeling I caught some of that match because I remember seeing Greg Excellent because I don't recognize him from when we saw him at MCW because he's lost, I think, 80 pounds or something. Like, I just, he's lost so much weight. I just don't recognize him anymore. Dog collar match, Declan Grant versus Devin Moore. Ricky Shane Page defeated Ron Mathis. And the Tremont Deathmatch Tournament's final, Taipei Fists. Shattered Dreams Elimination Match. That might be the longest title of a match ever. Kennedy Copeland defeated Bobby Beverly and Brandon Kirk and Mitch Vallon. So, a lot of those things, I always think, like, with deathmatch wrestling, like, you have the match, and then it's like, well, at least you've got a week to try and recover before you get into your next one. And some of those names I read out, they had three matches. And some of these matches are not like they're short matches either. They're not like 4 minute spots like you get on WWE. 18 minutes, 16 minutes, and almost every single match on here is well over 10 minutes. So impressive of the endurance that they actually have for this.
It's really all impressive, right. Too. Just real quick, if you remember a couple of weeks ago, ICW held a show and their main event was a 60 minute Iron Man death match.
Yeah.
And about 20 minutes in, I was worried about these guys falling over just from blood loss.
Yeah.
I mean, it was brutal. So, I mean, these men and women, they have extreme stamina. And you got to think that adrenaline is really pushing them to be able to, and just the idea of we're doing something crazy right now. Let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, a lot of respect for these wrestlers. Just normal wrestling, just your regular wrestling. You can appreciate the toll it takes on the body. And then you add this in as an extra step, and you do it three times in one weekend, and you do this every week of the year. It's suddenly like, wow, it's pretty mind-blowing. Yeah. Now, I think the thing I've got for the start that I don't think you have, Mason. No, you went straight into match one, didn't you? All right,
there was like a promo for Matt Tremont.
Oh, there was.
He came out of retirement.
He did come out of retirement for this match. Yeah. It was called I Want to Feel Alive Again. And I didn't realize at the time it was actually produced by Kenny Johnson.
Oh, what?
So, yeah, having to see afterwards, once I looked back at it, I was like, oh, that makes perfect sense. That kind of fits in with him perfect. It showed you the Trenton Thunder Stadium, which we actually went to probably about 5 years ago. I don't know if you remember.
A little bit.
The only thing I remember particularly is the Bat Boy was actually a dog. That's about the only thing. That's the thing I only remember. Yeah, the dog used to come out, used to pick the bat up, and then it would walk off the field with it, which was really cool. I have no idea who they played. I don't remember anything else at all. That's about as much as I remember. All right, shall we get into match one then? All right, match one, four-way match. Adonis Valerio, Declan Grant with Jess Moss versus Gigi Everson and Ryan Redfield. Mason, I'm going to let you go ahead. Go ahead, tell us about the match.
I like the fact that there's no apron so you can see what's under the ring. I personally like that, so you get to see what the weapons are under the ring. I kind of like that. But I did not like the font they used for the wrestlers.
The font?
Yeah, like...
when the wrestlers came out?
Yeah, like, it was... that I couldn't do it, so I had to go to cage match.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because for the first match, I did it, and I got Devlin.
Oh, okay. I don't remember.
You got
it was Declan. I have Declan. Well, that's fairly close.
Yeah, it's fairly close, but it's just, I just couldn't read that font for some reason. I just didn't like it.
I don't remember anything about the font. I'm gonna be
now I'm looking it up to see if I can find any pictures of it.
Yeah, I don't really remember. Yeah, I wasn't, because that wasn't my site, because I went straight to cage match, because I actually, I just, because the matches had already happened by the time I was doing it, so I'm like, well, I'm just going to be lazy. Why would I write these names out when I can just go straight there, copy the whole page, and then put spaces in between each match? So I didn't really even give it any thought. The other thing is, I knew a lot of these wrestlers, though, as well, because I've been watching more H2O recently, just mainly because of the No Holds Barred Network. Like, Tiffany's been doing lots of interviews with those people. So, yeah, like a lot of those people, I already knew who they were. Adonis Valerio was actually being interviewed tonight as we're recording, I think around 6 p.m., 7 p.m. And I've certainly seen Gigi Everson. Gigi Everson, we saw in one match, actually, so you might have known that one. When we reviewed IWTV 100, there was a lot of those H2O people on that. That was one of the questions I was going to ask you as well, actually, Ryan. How familiar were you with some of the younger wrestlers, particularly? Like, I know when we had you originally, last two times we had you on MGB, Mason wasn't actually here. I was actually just asking you for, well, the second time it was actually, hey, tell us more about Matt Tremont. And then the third time, I think it was tell us about, oh gosh, I want to say T-Bar now because I've totally forgot what his name is. Oh my gosh. Who's the Beyond Wrestler? Oh gosh, this has been embarrassing. Dominic Dijakovic or whatever. He was gone through different things. So yeah, I was kind of curious. So we know that you have experience with lots of different things, which is why we keep bringing you on the show. I was curious how much that H2O you watch, still watch, and how much you actually knew about some of these younger wrestlers.
I watch a lot of H2O is the primary independent organization that I watch.
Okay.
Sorry, just pulling something up to send you later now. H2O is I'm very familiar, and I love the H2O Undiscovered.
Yes.
Where it's students, but it's not just a student show. It's a lot of the times it's students versus veterans and stuff like that. But it's showcasing their talent. I was kind of hesitant about it at first. However, one of the originals, the OG undiscovered talents was Johnny Nova. And Johnny Nova is actually a good friend of mine. I've known him many, many years at this point. So when he told me that he was training with H2O and he was going to be wrestling for them, it evolved my interest in the promotion. Obviously I had a very casual relationship with Tremont, so I was very interested in the first place, but having someone who I was close friends with performing for the organization really kind of, so a lot of these guys I am very familiar with because I watched a lot of Undiscovered, and I've been watching H2O pretty much on and off since its inception. It used to be harder because, you know, you had to find it on YouTube or whatever, but now with IWTV, it's a lot easier because they stream almost every single one of their shows. The only shows they don't stream live are Undiscovered, but they usually have them up within a week or so. So that's usually what I'm watching. I'm really bad with indies right now. I pretty much watch H2O and GCW. So, but I am very familiar with a lot of the H2O mainstays, especially the trainees.
Whew, well, that's good. So when we got something we don't know, we can pass it straight across. Like, I didn't want to throw something across to you and you're like, yeah, I haven't really watched H2O in like 2 years. So go on and tell us about the match, Mason.
Adonis does a suicide dive, but there's no really padding. So he just does it on top of the grass.
I think grass is a little softer than, like, concrete, though.
Yeah, it is it does have a it does have some softness to it, but it does it doesn't feel good when there's someone like flying towards you and then you have to fall on top of the grass.
They could water the grass ahead of time. That would make it soften. I don't know that they do that. I'm just trying to think for soccer. Like, they would water the field ahead of time. No, I'm not saying like it make it waterlogged or anything, but they can make it a little bit softer.
Maybe.
I don't know. All right.
But then that would mean they would be wet the match, wouldn't it?
I guess.
They might slip on top of the ropes.
All right, you're probably right.
Like, if you're running the ropes, water could get on
the ropes.
All right,
good point. They didn't water it. You're right.
Adonis does a Bronco Buster, but it's just more disrespect than actual damage. But he pays for it by getting suplexed by Gigi Everson. What was his name again? Declan, I think.
Declan.
The person we came in with, Jess Moss, tries to attack Gigi, but also pays for it by getting two frog splashes by Adonis and Declan. Two frog splashes by Adonis.
Mm-hmm. This is why you need to use like punctuation when you take your notes. Like, if you put like a comma in there or like a period, then you'll know where one part ends and then the next part starts. And then if you use like a capital letter or something, this is some good English experience. I'm gonna be looking at your report card a lot more closely on the next one, the second quarter.
Frog splashes then by Adonis and Declan, and everybody is down. And then Ryan wins with a rock bottom, which he calls a redemption.
Now, this is interesting, because normally when it's just us two recording, we sit on opposite sides so we can kind of look at each other. But with having a guest, we're sat right next to each other. So I can actually see what your notes are. So this is kind of a little, this is kind of insightful, actually. I'm getting a little behind the scenes of MGB 3.5 years in. Ryan, what do you make of the match? Anything stick out to you?
Ryan Redfield, first and foremost, has been one of my standouts from H2O the entire time. And it's not just because he has an amazing first name. It's just because he has evolved so much. I remember first seeing him and just kind of being like, he's good, but he's young. You know, he'll get there. Mm-hmm. And he really got there a lot quicker than I expected him to. Mm-hmm. Gigi Everson, another guy I just absolutely love. I think he has such a good look to him. I honestly can see him. Gigi Everson is one of the guys where I can see him transitioning from deathmatch wrestling to AEW or NXT or something. He's got a look to him, and it's really impressive. And he's good in the ring. I thought it was a fine match for the opener. I really, really. And this is nitpicky of me. I feel, and GCW does the same thing. I feel if you have a deathmatch style promotion, you should probably open up with a little hardcore wrestling just to whet the appetite of the viewer. And then you go into your, you know, I know everyone likes to say like a big thing in wrestling is nobody wants to have the second match. The first match and the last match. Those are the matches that people, because everyone's really excited at the beginning.
Yeah.
And everyone's obviously really excited for the main event. And it's the middle card where you got to work your hardest. But I just feel like they should have come out a little stronger in the opening match. But I thought it was a great match. I enjoyed it. It kept my attention, which is really hard to do.
Now, I got to ask Mason, did you watch this with the sound on or the sound off?
I had the sound on.
Okay, the reason I'm asking is you were kind of joking. You're like, well, if we got the blade job on the show, then this doesn't have to be PG, right? So I was like, yeah, we're going to keep it PG.
Oh, yeah, this was
so
PG.
I would disagree because I was kind of curious. The thing with Gigi, as soon as he came out, it was the same thing when I was at IWTV. Like, he gets heel heat immediately. It was F-U-G-G, except they obviously didn't say that. So I was waiting. I was like, all right, I'm going to look over his shoulder and see if he has any mention on his nose. So, no, Gigi Everson is somebody I've quickly warmed to as well for that same reason, that it just you can get a reaction that quick. It doesn't matter whether it's positive or negative. Mm-hmm. It's great to see. Ryan Redfield as well, Big Red, somebody who I've kind of latched onto as well, just through those No Holds Barred Network interviews. Some people come through a lot stronger, and he was one who definitely resonated with me as well. But here's my confession for this one. I started to watch this event live because I knew we were going to review it, and I actually switched off at the end of this match. I was like, I can't do this. I was like, I don't know. For whatever reason, I did not feel – grabbed by this. We haven't even talked about this, Mason. We were actually going to go to this event at one point. It was discussed. The initial prices for the very front row seats were very prohibitive for us. But general admission seating was pretty reasonable. I think it was $25 were the cheapest seats, which is not bad at all for a unique event. And actually, it fell at the end of first quarter. I had my I literally had to do all my grading, get all my grades posted. And it was like, look, I can't do this. I can't travel 4 hours up, 4 hours back and do it. So we didn't go. There was a few other things I didn't like. See, I didn't like the fact that there was no apron there at all. I wanted there to be an apron. It didn't look as professional to me. Now, that might have been the look they were going for, but I didn't like it. I also, there was several other things I didn't like. I didn't like the sparsity of the crowd. I thought it was going to be a lot more packed. Now, I know it's a big baseball stadium, and that's a little different from packing a small little village hall or whatever the equivalent is. It didn't feel like a normal wrestling event would. And I didn't like that. And I didn't like the background either. The fact that the only thing you could see from the main hard cam was the center field wall, probably 300 feet away. And you could see the American flag. And that was it. It just felt a little empty.
I like that.
And that's fine. For me, it didn't grab my attention. I guess I've got used to watching and you can see a crowd behind. And then that kind of makes a difference because they're moving around. But all you could see was just literally a wall, and it wasn't grabbing me. So, no, I quit, actually. I was like, I'm going to watch it another time. I just watched the first bit.
I can agree with that. I think hard cam should have been the opposite side so you could see the crowd as well. And you could also see the entrance where they were coming out of the dugout.
Yeah.
For the apron standpoint, I can understand you don't see aprons in a lot of events that involve fire.
Uh-huh.
Because if the apron goes up, that's really hard to put out. It's just something I've noticed. It's one of those things like WWE, to use the example, when Raw goes on the air and you notice that they don't have those big things around the ring posts,
You
know something's going down. Either you're going to do a ring collapse spot or you're going to do a cage match or you're going to do something where those are in the way. And you can tell that as soon as the show starts. Because it's something that's missing. Also, there's little brackets they put around the ring that hold the cage in place. And whenever you see those, you know, oh, we're going to have a cage match tonight, regardless if they've announced it or not. These are little things that I notice because I pay too much attention to things. You know, just like when you know there's going to be an announce table bump where, you know, they don't have as much stuff on the table all of a sudden. You know exactly what they're planning. They moved it so nobody gets hurt or so someone's iPhone doesn't get crushed. You know, it's little things like that. And I think that might be the reason why we didn't have an apron, because H2O normally has an apron. It could have been wind, too. They didn't want it blowing all around, especially, once again, using fire.
Yeah.
You know, you might not want that involved. Spoiler alert to anyone who hasn't seen it yet. Main event, there's fire.
There's actually something, they changed the hard cam, I believe, because in the hard cam, you can see that there are other cameras. It's like two other cameras on the other side, wasn't there?
Possibly.
Because if I remember correctly, they did have that one side, it had the apron with the hard cam.
Oh,
okay. I don't know if they changed it because the crowd looked too empty. That's my best guess.
Don't know. I'd be curious to know what the attendance was. There's no way of finding that. Like, if it's a baseball game, they'll announce it, like the attendance to today game was, blah, blah, blah. I don't think they really do that at wrestling events, unless it's like a record or something. Like, I know they'll announce it for that. But yeah, I was trying to do a little count, and I was disappointed how few people were there in the end. I thought it would be...
There were a couple of shots where you could definitely see that there was a decently large crowd there. But I think you're right. I think we're so used to the modern style of independent wrestling where everyone's right there, everyone's up, you know, so a style that was pretty much popularized by Beyond, allowing the fans right up to the ring, which you know, is something that, you know, 5 years ago I was really a fan of, and now I just want to sit down because I'm tired and I don't want to stand for 4.5 hours. Which, a funny story about that, Santana Ortiz versus Eddie Edwards, and they were the Wolves. I can't remember what his tag team partner, who his tag team partner was. Anyways, Santana comes out into the crowd, and he pushes my girlfriend out of the way. And she looks at me, and she goes, This was her first Beyond show, might I add. And she goes,
welcome to Beyond.
She goes, that guy just touched my boob. And I went, no, there was probably a reason for it. About 3 seconds later, Ortiz comes flying over the top rope into the crowd. And I just go, see? Oh, no, I'm sorry. It was Eddie Edwards that pushed her out of the way.
Oh.
I go, see? And she goes, oh, no, that made sense why he pushed me out of the way. You know, it's just something we're used to now. You know, standing ringside.
See, I thought you were going to say you were against it now because of, like, COVID and social distancing.
No, I'm just tired. Tremont broke my hand coming out of the ring, taking a barbed wire chair. And afterwards, I was talking about it because my hand was all swollen and bruised. And he came over and he was very apologetic. He was like, I'm sorry, man. I'm like, don't worry about it. He knocked 2 beers out of my hand, though. So that was at least $7. He's just gone. But...
totally worth it for the story. Yeah, no, that was the thing that was noticeable as well. Like, those front row seats that were $200, like, that was probably would be, like, the worst seat that you could get if you went to Beyond. Like, obviously this is a very different, for the main event, if you're going to have an explode, you're going to have people further away. But for, yeah, when you talk about that proximity, that was the thing. It just wasn't as close. Now, I don't think I specifically wrote this down in my notes, but I was going to mention it at some point. It was interesting, though, that although the fans were a lot further away from the ring than you would expect to be normal, I could hear the fans better than I could hear the wrestlers in the ring on the microphone. I have numerous times when I was like, I have no idea what they're saying, but I can hear the crowd chanting very clearly.
I think there was a mic there.
So that was, well, I'm sure there was a mic for that, but why is the mic that's next to the crowd better than the handheld mic that they give to the
wrestler? What I think is they probably had the hard cam microphone on, which was right next to the crowd, and that was picking up the crowd noise. The issue, and I have this issue with a lot of indie promotions too, is that they don't pipe their mics through their camera systems. And we all know IWTV brings professional camera equipment to these shows. They don't pipe that through, because they pipe it through the same speakers they do the theme songs, which they cannot pipe through their stream or they're going to get sued. And I think that's the problem, because I know when Chainsaw Tony was talking, I didn't hear a single word he said.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I couldn't understand Onita. I couldn't understand Tremont.
Yeah.
I could barely understand the ring announcer, who I feel very bad because I'm blanking on his name right now.
I can't remember either. Yeah.
I want to say J. Rose, but I don't think it was J. Rose. I could be wrong, though. It's been like a week and a half. I can't be expected to remember things.
All right, let's get on to match two then. This is the H2O tag team title. Lucha Rules four-way match. Chris Bradley and Kristen Ross are the current champions. They were facing Bobby Dempsey and Mike Quest, and versus Jeff Cannonball and Terry Calloway and White Trash Forever, which is Bruce Gray and Tyler Vox. All right, Mason, tell us about this one.
I didn't like Mike Quest's name. It's kind of hard to say. Like, Mike Quest.
You just did it perfectly.
No. Twice in a row. It just rolls off the tongue better when it's like Mike Quest. I don't like the K and the Q. I don't know. It's just something.
So you want his first name to be Mike?
No.
Mike Quest.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why, but it just... something I nitpicked.
And you thought your level of pettiness was bad on here. All right, we're going to try and one-up each other, aren't we? Coming out with the most pettiest things possible. This will work.
Chris Bradley and Christian Rocks. Never mind. Tyler tries to shake Tara's hand, but then tries to cross her with a suplex, but can't lift her. Tara tags Bruce, and now it's WTF versus WTF in the ring. That's the tag team.
That was the tag team name?
White Trash Forever.
Oh, okay.
They shortened it to WTF.
Gotcha.
In the ring, but is broken up by the outside so they don't pin each other for a cheap win. There was a train of sleepers where everyone gets a sleeper on each other, and then the ref raises one hand for the pass out, and everyone's hand goes up, and then go up on two, and then everyone's hand stays up, and then I think Tara messed up because her hand went down, and then she quickly raised it up. I don't know if anyone else caught it.
It's true, I caught that.
Yeah, and then the ref got put in a sleeper inside the sleeper train, and then he does a jawbreaker, and that like domino affects everyone, and then everyone goes out the ring. And then during the ref's 10 count, everyone gets in at the count of 9. Bruce gives Jeff Cannonball the kiss of death, and then when he wants to leave with Jeff, he kicks the ropes to hurt Jeff's dingo. Bruce accidentally runs into Tyler's dingo, which is his own partner, and Chris picks and slams the whole of WTF, and Christian finishes it off with a splash off of the top rope for the win.
I wrote down one thing. I just love the jawbreaker on the ref. Like, whenever the ref gets involved like that, I just think it's instant comedy. I like the difference in, we talked about this as obviously a deathmatch kind of tournament, that just so far away from the deathmatch side of it that it just can't help but be funny as far as I'm concerned. And it kind of took me back to that first time for our first indie event. Like, who did we fall in love with first of all? Tim Donst. Safety first, Tim Donst. We knew Tim Donst first for his comedic wrestling rather than his, because he does deathmatch type wrestling as well, but we just didn't associate him with that at all. But no, it was something that I certainly appreciated. I thought it was, this was the first match that I came back and watched like a week later. And after I'd watched this one, I was like, all right, I'm ready now. This has got my attention. I felt a lot better about the event. I was like, perhaps I did quit a little too quickly, like a week ago. Yeah. But no, I thought it was a thoroughly enjoyable match. It had its silly moments in there as well, but hey, you got to mix it up. If you're going to have, I think it was 7 matches on the card, you can't just have 7 death matches. You've got to have something that's going to mix it up a little bit. Ryan?
8-person referee stunner is one of my, is my favorite spot since Tommaso Ciampa put his finger in Jushin Liger's butt. If anyone knows what, if you know what I'm talking
BMG,
about.
I believe, right?
Oh, yeah. Where everyone just kept...
And the reason I know is for Jackson's little spin-off podcast, Jackson's Goofy Brawls, when I was doing like a search for like goofy matches, that was one that came up and I was like, oh, Jackson would love this, but there is absolutely no way he's watching this match.
It's one of those things too, because it's a very good match with a very, very silly moment. I mean, you look at some of the talent that was involved. Yeah. Like, we're not talking random people. We're talking Malakai Black, Tommaso Ciampa. You know, like, these are, you know, actually, you know what? No, screw that. I'm going to call him Tommy End. I'm sorry. Tommy End. But I digress. This was a fun match. It's unfortunate because I'm such a big fan of hers, but Tara really shows her ring rust, unfortunately, because she does not wrestle full time anymore. And I'm noticing she's a lot slower in the ring than she used to be. Still a big fan. I mean, I just think her whole persona and the good things she does in her life now while she's not wrestling with Dropkick Depression and working with Rain. I think it's really, really commendable. Jeff Cannonball might be my favorite wrestler of all time at this point, just because he's Jeff Cannonball and he's amazing. And if you watched Tremont's Deathmatch Tournament the night before, he goes to do his short soda review, but Eddie only sneaks up behind him and puts his cigarette out in the soda, which I thought was amazing. Eddie Only's another guy who I just absolutely love. I love him so much. His character is so fun. And even though the general consensus is F Ohio, 440 in general is probably my favorite faction on the indies right now. They're so good. They're so talented. And I mean, you know, they're just based on one member, they're inspirational, really. You know, it's except for RSP's new eagle tattoo across his chest, which is just horrible, horrible. Anyways, not as bad as Cody's neck tattoo, but you know, that's...
Eddie Only was actually part of Tim Donst's safety squad.
So that's another one. Really?
Yeah, so that's another one. Like, when I actually saw Eddie Only recently, I was I think it was at the, I'll say recently, it probably wasn't recently, that 24-hour continuous wrestling match, wrestling event. Exactly. It's probably 7 or 8 months ago. Besides that, when I saw him on that, I was like, that's Eddie Only? I was like, oh my gosh. Like, I did not recognize him at all. Because he was in like the high fluorescent visible jacket and like goofy attire. I think he had a brush with him as well. And he was like sweeping there. And then I was like, that's Eddie Only? I was like, oh my gosh. So, yeah. Amazing those transitions, how you can get so used to one character and then not realize that other people have a totally different impression of that same character. All right, match three was the H2O hybrid title. Five-way match, Kennedy Copeland was the champion, Mickey Knuckles, Jenny Rose, Casey Catal, and Masha Slamovich. Mason, I got to tell you, when I looked through the card and I saw this one, this was one I was definitely excited for. I've heard a lot of good things about Mickey Knuckles, but I'd never actually seen her in any matches before. So go ahead, tell us about this one.
Everyone is fighting and Masha's just letting them fight. She's just chilling on the ropes. Masha does a senton off of the top rope onto the outside and takes everybody out. Masha then does a suplex off of the top rope to Casey, and Mickey and Masha just keep headbutting each other like they're like running into each other like head on. And Kennedy wins with an Alabama slam and a jackknife pin.
Yeah, Kennedy Copeland is somebody who I've saw several times over the summer. And Masha Slamovich, I can never see enough of her matches as far as I'm concerned. Now, I haven't got to see as many as I would like so far, just because she's a kind of a new name on my radar within perhaps the last 2-3 months. I was surprised by the number of high-flying moves, though. You mentioned that, like that senton from the top. I don't remember that from her other matches. I think of her, when I think of her, I think of her as like as a hard hitter. Like, she'll do a lot of those intergender matches. Like, I saw one with her recently against... one called Manders, like, he's definitely a hard hitter as well. So it was surprising to see kind of that was not what I was expecting, but it was as good as I think that she is. Now it's like, oh, not only is she good, she has this tool to her armory as well. Yeah, I think the sky's the limit for Masha Slamovich. But yeah, no, I thoroughly enjoyed this match.
Yeah, usually I wouldn't put a senton in, but well, she does it off the top to the outside, yeah. And that's really cool. But
she had to land on the grass as well. Yeah. Woof. I mean, that grass is so hard, but yeah, no, I'm going to say that impressed me too.
Hardest part of the field.
Yeah, I didn't see any match like that. I've only seen her in CFU.
You haven't seen her in an actual wrestling match then?
No.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you... CFU is one of our local... Well, we say local organization. They're actually wrestling out in New Jersey. It's... they have the cage... Every single match is a cage match, and it's kind of set up similar to MMA rules. So they have 3-minute matches, and but she's their current champion. They've only had 2 events so far. She was crowned at the last one. So, yeah, I've forgotten that you haven't actually seen her in a traditional wrestling
contest. This promotion is essentially Ken Shamrock's Lion's Den, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Could be. I am not familiar with that one. So
they ran it in the mid-90s where he wrestled Owen Hart in essentially the octagon, but they didn't want to put it on the ring, so it was down by the entrance. It was really awkward and really not great. I think he had another one with Steve Blackman.
Yeah. Whoever,
by the way.
Yeah.
Bonds Bill.
Oh, yeah, he's good. Yeah, I remember that one. Thoughts on this one, Ryan, at all?
Let's talk about Kennedy Copeland. I love her.
Yeah.
I absolutely adore everything she does. Seeing her and having her win Tremont's deathmatch tournament the night before, it really showed her moxie, as it were. You know, even though no matter what they did, they could not get the pane of glass to break when trying to put her through it. If you didn't watch the event, it was, I think, 4 or 5 spots that Brendan Kirk tried to put her through the glass, and it just would not break. Probably because she weighs like 97 pounds. Having flashbacks to Charlotte, Sasha, Hell in a Cell all over again. And I was there, and I could even tell with a giant cage around them that things weren't going well. It was a good match. Jenny Rose, I was really happy to see. I used to see her everywhere, and I haven't lately. So she was, I didn't look at the card. The only match I knew about going into this was the main event.
Yeah.
So Jenny Rose was really excited. Casey Catal, they may say F the Kirks, but you gotta love the Kirks. I mean, they're so good. They're so talented at what they do. Mickey Knuckles, I can take her or leave her. She's fine. Same thing with Masha Slamovich. I know she's got such a following right now, and she's fine to me. The match itself, I thought, was really good. I would have actually preferred it to be maybe trimmed down a little bit. Maybe a triple threat. Or maybe a four corners. I felt that five was just, I don't know, it felt like it was at least one too many people. That's just me. I'm actually not a fan of multi-person matches when they get too much. I love a good three-way dance.
Yeah,
all day long. I was watching ECW in the late 90s, where three-way dances, if you saw a one-on-one match, you were like, oh, it's going to be good. If you saw Tajiri super crazy and, Psychosis in a three-way dance, you were like, this is about to be the best match I've ever seen. I just felt there was too many people in it. But Kennedy retains, and I'm happy with that, because I really want to see where they're going with her booking in H2O, because she has moved her way up. I can see Kennedy Copeland being the first ever female H2O champion.
I have a similar criticism. At this point, I'm going to say, having kind of tapped out after match one, but then came back for the first two, I was like, okay, we got some different things in here. But then after that, I felt there was too many people in a lot of the matches, with the exception of the main event. So we started with a four-way match, then another four-way match, then that five-way match. We're about to talk about the Rumble match, so there's like 20 people in that one. We then had a 12-man tag team match, another tag team match, which is essentially four people as well, because that's always how they break down in the end. Everyone just gets in the ring. And then it was the main event. Yeah. I thought that they could have taken out a few. I know they want to get everybody involved because it's a big event, but I also thought less is more for this. A three-way match would have been good. Just a singles match, besides the main event. You can put that one in the middle of the card somewhere.
Yeah.
I thought there was too many events, too many when there was just too many people, particularly
one-on-one match on the entire card. And I agree. I think, it's kind of a running joke in wrestling. You guys can't get along. Well, you're going to have a tag team match, players. It's a joke at this point, and WWE obviously does it all the time. You cannot go a single WWE event without having a six-man tag or an eight-man tag. Or, because tag team wrestling is great when it's done well. And WWE has a stacked tag team roster. AEW has a stacked tag team roster. We've got a lot of good tag team wrestling happening. But, and we'll get to it, momentarily. Even on the indies, when you just put people together as a tag team, it's just as bad on the indies as it typically is in WWE or AEW. Sometimes it works great. The Bar. Sheamus and Cesaro were amazing as a team. And we all thought the same thing. Oh, yeah, all right. They're just sticking two random guys together. That's what WWE does. Stick two people together and see what happens. This is when they got lucky. And we'll get to it in a couple matches. But, yeah, not enough singles matches. Really, really could have benefited from I think the hybrid championship, like three-way, like I said. Yeah. And also, I think I feel like the first match too, Redfield versus Everson.
Yeah.
Make it short and simple, to the point. Yeah. But, no singles matches, which is a little disappointing to me.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. I wanted to see more singles matches, but I really like Masha Slamovich's name. Like, when you look at the card and you just don't really know anybody, then you want to look for the name that sounds the coolest. And Masha Slamovich is just such a cool name.
Not my question.
No.
Oh, okay.
I wouldn't
have seen it, she had her own show for Beyond, 2 months ago. They had Porsche at the beach. Yep. And her and Allie Catch, I have to get used to Catch.
Yes.
they force each other to eat borscht. Like, I don't know what was happening. I'll admit it was one of the few Beyond shows. I was just like, whatever. I don't like the pier shows. I don't like the shows at Showboat where they're out on the pier. I'm not a huge fan of outdoor wrestling, to be fair. Especially because there's a lot of things you cannot do outside, especially on a public pier. You're not going to see a lot of broken glass. You're not going to see a lot of you're not going to see anything that's going to damage the pier. And nobody went into the ocean the last couple of times, so I'm pretty over it.
Okay.
People went in the ocean?
Yeah. So yeah, we'll have to do some more reviews of thing. We'll set a grapple box MGB up for Beyond
That'd
show.
Be
okay.
Cool. If they pre dug out a hole, and then it was first to get buried in the sand.
Yeah. Why aren't you doing buried alive matches on the beach?
Yeah.
It's perfect.
Drown somebody in the water at the same point, force their head under the water. I can see where you're going with this. All right, match four. Hardcore Rumble match. A lot of people in this one. Alex Stretch, Mark Angel, Chainsaw Tony, Rukus, Crazy Ivan, Low Life Louie, Robbie Illuminati, Drew Blood. Ooh, I'm not sure how to pronounce that one. Is it Katie Lothbrok? I don't know. Neil Diamond Cutter, Brandon Kirk, Casanova Valentine, Connor Claxton, Frankie Picard, Bam Sullivan, Dan O'Hare, Mouse, Larry Legend, Sean Henderson. I think that's everybody. Now, the name that caught me on this, because normally when we're doing our reviews, Mason, I'll pick out a name who I don't know as much and I'll go research them. I didn't even do that for the first three matches. I was like, there's nobody really. Like, I know some of these people, but I was like, there was nothing really that kind of caught my eye. Chainsaw Tony definitely caught my eye, though. So that was one person I did start looking up. This was from an article in Slam Wrestling, December 6th, 2020. Chainsaw Tony started off as a video trader and made his debut as a fan at an event age 15. So I don't even think, from the article that I read, I don't even think he realized he was going to be in a match. And then it sounded like they were like, do you want to be in a match? And he's like, sure. And then that was his debut. So I don't know. I would like to know more about that. Wrestling legend Pogo would bestow the mantle of Leatherface permanently upon Myers. Pogo was protective of the name Leatherface. Outside FMW, WWS, and certain other promotions, Myers used the gimmick under other monikers. Chainsaw Tony Myers is the third gaijin. I'm not very good with my Japanese words. Terrorize Japanese ringside fans with his chainsaw. And following Mike Kirchner and Rick Patterson. The lineage and visuals of Leatherface from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies. I realized I've been trying to go through films I've missed and I should have watched. I've never seen a Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I feel like that I should have seen one of those. So I'm adding that onto my list of films to watch. It said it was perfect for his merchandise. I was like, oh yeah, absolutely. So he was definitely a character that was definitely very noticeable within this. It made me a little uneasy, actually. Like, I'm watching this, he's got his chainsaw and he's swinging it around one-handed. I'm like, uh-oh, safety regulations right here. It did make me nervous. I was like, if that slips, that's something that's... Anyway, go ahead, Mason, tell us about the match.
What I didn't like about this Rumble match was they didn't have the countdown.
No, it was a little different. It looked like sometimes a group of people would come out.
It felt more like AEW's Casino Battle Royale, where they had groups come out, which makes sense for anyone who's ever seen the Royal Rumble. You know, you've got 30 people, to start, but you've got 30 people with, 2 minutes in between each of them, or 2 minutes, right?
Yeah.
I want to say it's two. You know, that's a minimum of 60 minutes just to get the people out there. Whereas what AEW does and what H2O do, having them come out in groups, I do enjoy, because it makes them go quicker. I love a good battle royal. I love a good rumble style battle royal where it's entrant based. But sometimes they're just very, very long and they make me very, very tired.
I liked. I didn't like that they didn't have the countdown. I wanted to see 30 seconds in between with a 5-second countdown to get the crowd.
They could have at least put it on for the afterwards for the effects for the people watching it. They didn't have to do it necessarily live at the arena, but they could have
made a better effect if you got the crowd chanting.
Of course, you got to get the crowd doing the famous once it gets down to zero. It's not a rumble without the crowd mocking the sound effect at the same time.
But what I did like a little bit about it, though, was the surprise element. You don't know like how many people are coming out, when they're coming out?
I didn't listen to that. I don't think I had the commentary on this. I think most of the, I think I did for half of these matches, and half I was like listening to music and just watching. So yeah, I'm not sure if they announced like coming up, get ready to see, like, I don't know, Mark Angel's about to come into the ring. So I don't know any, I don't know if they did that or not.
They didn't say that. They just said it can be like how they said it could be like four or five or whatever amount of people, and they said the time is like randomized too.
Okay, so whenever they're ready, they'll just
whenever someone out. Got tired, they were like, okay, send some more people out.
Yeah, just go get out there. The crowd's starting to get restless. Go on, send a few more names in there.
Yeah, and at the start, it's four people start in the ring, and then three more people enter after like 30 seconds. Brandon Kirk gets handcuffed to the ropes like before he entered the ring, and I didn't like that because, well, I want to see him get in the ring, like, just because I want to see him wrestle, not just stand out on the outside. But
this is my continued problem with Rumbles, that if you don't get into the ring within 15 seconds, you should be like instantly eliminated. I don't like any of that. That was the one thing I wrote about this match. I don't know quite when the handcuffs came off, but then also he was just stood on the outside. And I know you said Marsha did that in the previous one as well. He's just there with a grin on his silly grin on his face. And I know he's playing up a heel character. I don't like it, though. I don't like, thankfully, that was the one good thing with having no apron on there. No one could actually hide under the ring. I hate it when that happens. That's been just been done
Has Curtis Axel been eliminated from the Rumble yet? I'm just wondering if that's happened, because he could come back and he could win the Rumble by just showing up.
It's ridiculous. If you're at the ring for more than 15 seconds, it should just be like a count out, like it would be in any other match.
Well, I think if you don't enter the ring within 15 seconds, you know, because obviously, like, just thinking of it from a logistics standpoint, you know, rolling under the ropes, that's their rest period. You know, that's you know, from the idea of like the performance of professional wrestling, it makes sense that they would allow it. But yeah, there are too many times. I don't know how many times The Miz has hung out outside the ring during the Rumble for the entirety of the whole thing.
Yeah, I hate that.
Yeah. And it's not heel heat to me. It's just like, you're trying to swerve us, but you're not doing a good job at it. You know, have someone under a mask or something enter the ring and win it, and then take off the mask to reveal Dolph Ziggler. You know, like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Dolph Ziggler won the Rumble. We had no idea. You know, there's other ways to do it. You know, just have the 29th entrant be question mark.
Yeah.
Like you said, Marsha Slamovich on the ropes, like that's still totally different though. Because, like, you can only sit on there for, like, 20 seconds before you're getting, like, punched or somebody is getting you down from the top rope.
I guess.
And it's different because on the outside you can just stand there forever, ever.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't like it.
But there's only one person I love under the ring, and that's Hornswoggle.
Nah, Hornswoggle get a pass from me as well, actually. Yeah.
Does anyone remember when DX went underneath the ring and found the whole, like, family of Hornswoggles living under there, where they had their whole, like, Vince's office and everything? It was wonderful.
I hadn't seen that until literally this week. Somebody had actually posted this. Someone was like, really? Does anyone remember when this happened? And I was like, no. But I was like, I need to now. Like, you definitely go. No, I did not watch wrestling at that period of time.
Yeah, that was like, the beauty, because it was really hard when DX came back, because it was, you know, getting into the PG era, so they couldn't be full DX. Actually, that one may have been pre-PG, but Michaels had come back as a born-again Christian, so he didn't want to be involved with the more adult-themed things. Yeah. So there used to be a bit where Triple H was about to make a sexual joke, and he would be like, oh, hey, Sean, check that out. And Sean would go, ooh, and then wander away. They would do the bit, and then Sean would come back and be like, Rosario Dawson wasn't over there. What are you talking about? You know, like something random like that. It was very funny. I recommend going back and checking out the 2008 DX, I think it was. It was not the original DX. It was a lot more family friendly, but it was still pushing the boundaries. Mm-hmm. Very funny stuff.
I think the biggest mistake WWE made was going to PG. I think that was their biggest mistake.
I think part of it is it was more what the advertisers want, though, as well. I think it's not necessarily if WWE would have been allowed to do it, I think they probably would have continued. But there was outside pressures as well, and money talks. So if the advertisers are saying, hey, look, we don't want that, we don't want to be associated with that anymore, can you tone it down a little bit? Then you're going to do what they do. Same with like Fox paying all that money. If Fox now says, hey, we want this, then you're going to provide whatever Fox wants. Because they're not going to give you the money otherwise. So, but no, I would agree with you.
The main story is that Mattel did not want blood, and Mattel is their primary action figure, which is a primary source of revenue for them.
Yeah.
And Mattel doesn't want blood because of whatever reason. You know, there were talks. I don't know if you remember a couple of years ago, they sent out the fan council emails. You know, hey, please fill out our survey and let us know.
Yeah.
And one of the questions was, would you like a show on the network? Remember the network? That was
a good time.
Would you like on a show on the network of more mature content akin to ECW? Yeah. And I actually opened it with multiple emails to vote yes. Because you don't – Raw and SmackDown – if Raw and SmackDown is going to be marketed towards younger people, which is fine. WWE has always been marketed – you know, the Attitude Era was a drop in the bucket. Other than that, it was always marketed towards a younger audience.
Mm-hmm.
Give us one show. Just make NXT TV-14 and let it be its own thing instead of rebranding to a weird tie-dye, which is weird. Unless they change that tie-dye one day to blood and it's like, yeah. But yeah, that's just me. We're getting off topic, I think.
Something Mattel does is, like, if the paint comes off of the action figure, there's red. Like, my Rusev wrestling figure, like, the paint has come all off of his face, uh-huh. and it's red, just so they can keep it normal, I think. I don't know, but...
What do you mean, normal?
I think it's how they paint them, because I used to do miniatures, and they start gray, but you actually want to paint them a solid color, and it's usually red or black before you start painting over it. I don't know. I'm not a professional, but it could be something related to that. I don't know. I don't take my wrestling figures out of the box anymore, so they're not as fun. I've got an Ortiz figure back here that's just sitting there. I'm gonna give it away for Christmas.
I saw some on eBay this week. I can't remember what I was searching for, but there was like a lot of something. So the price was significantly lower than everything else, so I clicked on it. You couldn't even see who the wrestlers were. It was so bad. Like, all their face had been like been eroded away. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't imagine anyone.
I go to a lot of flea markets, and that's what I come up with usually. Like, the figures are just in such poor quality. It's like, it says, oh yeah, the tag says Hacksaw Jim Duggan, but it just looks like like a tan blob.
Yeah, I actually thought it would make an interesting quiz. I did think about it. I was going to do screenshots and then show them to Matt, and he's got to figure out who it is. Because I think there was a list at the bottom, like it said who it was, and I'm like, no, is that really that person?
Yeah, you got to think those figures back then too. Like, if you're looking at older figures, they didn't have the quality in the first place.
Yeah,
like, they don't have those face scans that we do now.
These were early 80s figures, so yeah, 40 years of play, then yeah, they're going to be, this is going to happen, unless you look.
I remember my first ever WWE figures. It wasn't the normal ones, it was more like, it was like smaller in height, but like more chunkier, and like you could take the arms off and pull it away, and there would be like a string, and then when you would let go, it would snap back to the body.
Oh, like the old G.I. Joe figures from the 80s.
Yeah, it was the Miz and Zack Ryder.
I remember you having a Miz figure, but I don't remember that property at all.
I thought it was really cool.
It's a King of the Death match we're talking about right there.
Yeah, do you remember your first figures?
I remember my first figure. Yeah, because I didn't have wrestling figures when I was a kid. So my first one was, I kind of felt a little left out. You had all the figures, and I was like, I don't have a single one that's mine. Like, you'd give me one to use, like if we were having a match or something. So I actually got Honky Tonk Man. Honky Tonk Man's my first wrestling figure. I saw it. It was on sale. It was like half the price it should have been. And I was like, it looks cool. I was like, I'm getting Honky Tonk Man. So yeah, that's my first figure.
I want to say my first wrestling figure was Sting. And I just to date a little bit for those listening in the world, I'm pretty sure it was Surfer Sting, not Crow Sting. I can't remember though. It was funny. When I was younger, I watched wrestling. I didn't really want wrestling figures though. I wanted Ghostbusters and Ninja Turtles and Aliens. For some reason, the Alien franchise had a whole host of action figures for movies that you should not be watching if you're buying action figures. Luckily, my dad didn't care, and I saw Terminator 2 and the Alien trilogy when I was, like, 8.
Now, I actually gave, like, I'm watching some classic ones. Like, if I haven't seen them in a long time, if I see them at the library, I'm like, oh, I haven't watched this in a long time. Let me go. So Alien was one I watched, and I seem to remember I gave that to you to watch when you said, I was like, hey, look, you got to watch this. It's like a classic. And then I asked you about it, and you had no idea what I was talking about. I think I gave you the video, and you gave it back to me without even watching it. Is that right? Yeah. That was Alien.
That was the only one. But that was because I was pretty busy, because the science fair just started. And then I had to do the background research.
You get 3 weeks to watch a DVD when you get it out from our library right now. They've extended the time since the pandemic's here. It used to be a week, and now you get 3 weeks to watch it. But all right, so I'll rent it out again. But yeah, you definitely need to watch Alien. So I was like, hey, what did you think of like when the alien came out of his chest? And you had like no idea what I was talking about. But
especially Aliens, the second one. Such a good movie.
Mm-hmm. You gave me The Martians, and I like them.
I did give you the Martian, which
that's
is
a top three movie.
It's a good movie, but it's not on the same level of sci-fi horror, which Alien is. So, hey, never mind.
Horror movie, yeah, to be honest.
All right.
It's not my favorite.
So, and here you choose, whenever we pick, like, hey, you got a free choice, what would you like to review? You always pick something that's got blood and gore in it. Like, you love your death matches, you love anything that's like that, but your films, you don't want anything like that.
Well, I don't know. Well, it's like the creepy stuff, that's what I don't like.
All right.
I don't mind the blood and stuff like that, but just jump scares. I don't like jump scares.
Okay. All right.
Like, when boom. I was like, no, not like that. When I was like 9 or 10,
uh-huh.
It was always so scary when like the good guy would always go to the bad guy's like house or something to go look for something.
Mm-hmm.
I would always be like so scared because there would always be a jump scare and I would hate it.
Okay.
I would always be so scared for that.
It's a good job you don't watch WWE anymore, because Seth went around to Edge's house recently. He was like, he's getting things out of his fridge and eating it.
He left the fridge open. So mad about that. I watched it live and I'm like, do you know the electricity? I don't care how rich Edge is, the electricity bill, and plus there's probably some like deli meat and stuff, like you're ruining it. What if their cheese goes bad? Like, I'm so upset right now.
He was critiquing the kid's artwork. I think it might have been even on the front of the fridge. I can't quite remember, but yes, it was.
Edge and Rollins is my favorite feud in WWE, but I digress.
All right, tell us about the rest of this match, Mason. I have no idea where you're up to. I'm hoping you put like your thumb or something on the line you're up to.
No. Someone comes in with what looks like a huge wooden axe wrapped with barbed wire.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember that.
But, I do not. Nope.
Brandon still handcuffs, gets the first elimination, which I don't like. Stupid. He's handcuffed out of the ring and he gets an elimination. And he just pulled the rope down, I think, with the handcuff.
Sounds like kind of smart.
But yeah, it was a little smart. But Brandon eventually gets out of the handcuffs by just pulling it.
And that's the part I missed. I don't remember. I remember being in handcuffs, and then it was like, oh, he's not in handcuffs. And I must I don't always give 100% concentration when some of these matches are on, I have to admit. So, and I wasn't rewinding it.
We have Twitter, you know. You got to look down on Twitter every now and then.
Yeah. Someone hits basically everyone with a street sign. I don't know who it was, but Chainsaw Tony comes in with a live chainsaw and eliminates just a few people. By just like having the motor on.
Sure.
But I don't know, I think they took like the actual dangerous part.
The blade.
Yeah, they take the chain off the actual, so it's just going. And I only know this because Warhorse, when he was Warhorse Jake Parnell, and he was in the Viking, what was it, the Viking War Party.
Oh yeah. Oh gosh, yeah.
It was him and Herzog and. Anyways, they also brought a chainsaw to the ring one time at Beyond, and I was like, this is not safe.
Yeah.
But there was no chain on it. He put it down right in front of me, and I went, oh, it's just to go, meh, 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 meh. And I was like,
all right, fine. Hey, please don't cut me up. It got me. Yeah, it totally got me. I was nervous watching it because I was like, if that slips out of his hand, he was swinging it one-handed. I'm like, what the heck? Yeah. You're like, you use two hands.
Only time I've seen a real chainsaw was when, oh my God, what the hell was the name of that? Retribution. Mm-hmm. When they came and they started cutting the ring ropes and stuff. That was a real chainsaw because they actually cut the ropes. But they probably, since they were under masks, there was probably someone more trained than just like T-bar, you know, or mace, slapjack.
A lumberjack. They probably hired a lumberjack. I don't think they legally can't. There will probably be a load of paperwork to have a live chainsaw.
Well, that's what I was like, I don't know. Like, they do some crazy things. And I was like, hey, I guess. And I was like, also, this is from Japan as well. And I was like, hey, they have some different things out there. Like, we talked about some of the things in BJW. Like, they're crazy. They have piranha matches. They have these exploding matches that we're going to be talking about in the main event pretty soon as well. So I was like, it seemed plausible that somebody could have a chainsaw.
It could have been just because the fans were away.
Yeah.
That probably would have been, I guess, one of the instances where they possibly could have. But when there's fans where there's no, barricades or anything, and you need to sign, I think you probably need to sign something if you're going to have minors there with a live chainsaw with chains. Probably maybe even adults need to sign a waiver.
But the fans being so far away made it seem more plausible. But I did worry about, as a wrestler, if I was in that, I would have been very uncomfortable. But I didn't realize at that time that it wasn't real. So.
But then the next, 10 seconds, the chainsaw is still on, but the wrestlers go attack him to get the chainsaw out of the ring. That's when the chainsaw turns off. Okay, now I need to find where I am. And eliminates a few people. Everyone attacks and gets the chainsaw out of the ring. 6 people left, and Brandon still hasn't entered the ring. 3 people left, and he finally enters the ring now.
Yep.
Brandon eliminates someone and gets his foot caught. It caught in the ropes in doing so, and then gets eliminated. And Tony misses a moonsault off of the top rope, but Chainsaw Tony still wins by hitting the other guy in the head.
I did have written down here, do you think Brandon's foot was supposed to get caught in the rope? Because I didn't. It didn't look like that was supposed to happen.
It looked like the referee and other people were trying to get him free. The fact that other wrestlers and ring crew were kind of over at him tells me that it was the same situation of like when Foley would do the rope twist where he would lynch himself in the ropes. And he did it in, you know, we all know 1992 in Germany, and it was too tight and he lost a piece of his extremities in that moment, you know. I think this is a situation where he just went over bad and went, uh-oh, this isn't good. And those are steel cable ropes too, where that's very tight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mick Foley, if she wanted to keep that ear.
I would have kept it in a jar.
Yeah, and I read the book about that. Not the whole book, but I read the part about it. But he, like, instead of going to the hospital in the ambulance, he wanted to take pictures of it instead.
Yeah. So by the time he got there, they had thrown it away, and he was like, oh, well.
And he said,
I kind of needed that.
He said that he wanted the award for the most patient, or the most calm, the calmest patient, because the doctor said that he was very, calm for someone who just lost their ear. And he said that sounded pretty cool as, when he's getting announced to the ring as the most calmest person in the emergency room.
Mm-hmm.
If you watched, if you've ever watched the Untold about Foley and Edge at WrestleMania, they have footage of them after the match, you know, thumbtacks, barbed wire, flaming table spot. Like, it was a crazy match. Foley's making jokes and he's pointing at his arm and he's like, hey, you can smell the burnt flesh, huh? And he's just like cracking jokes as they're stitching him up. Edge looks like he just went through an actual war. His eyes are glazed over. He's just staring off into space because he had never done that before. He had never done fire and thumbtacks and all that kind of stuff. And you can see it in his eyes. Whereas Foley's like, this was nothing. You should see the other stuff I've done.
Yeah, like he's had third degree burns before. In the back of the book, it shows like his body, and then it has like little labels on everything like that's really bad happened to him, like broken noses, bones. He's broken like over 200 bones, I think he said.
I can believe that. Some of them probably the same one more than once. Oh, now, as you were talking about Mick Foley's book, of course, it reminded me of very early MGB. Oh, we used to give our guests assigned Mick Foley books. So I know Ryan is certainly the recipient of one of those books. I know Matt is. I'm trying to think. I know at Rain Counter is as well, because I'm never quite sure how to address him now. So I'm going to use his Twitter handle. But yeah, that's something that we're out. That's a long, long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think it's 3+ years ago since we left, but that was one of the first things that we did. I can't remember why we started to do it. That part's been lost a little bit in history now. I know Matt's listening to this. Matt will remind me next time I talk to him how that actually started.
The historian.
I don't think he never forgets a fact. It's just uncanny, his recall on things like that.
I want to look up the most obscure facts ever in wrestling. And see if he can know what it is.
He probably would.
Having been in a quiz with him recently on the Devoid Wrestling Entertainment Network or whatever it's called, one of the rounds was, as soon as you get one wrong, you're eliminated. And it was literally NXT champions. And him and Brett from the Brainbuster Boys, they went every single one for one, all the way back to the first champion. And then, so they had to have a tiebreaker. And then it was what's been the main event at the last, at the pay-per-views. So they were working back. They just went back so far, it was ridiculous. Like, Matt, he's uncanny.
I don't remember the results of AEW last night.
And exactly, that's what I'm like. Like, I enjoy it.
I think Wardlow won. That's about it.
It was uncanny how good some people are at doing that, but that's certainly not my strength. One more thing from Chainsaw Tony, from that same interview from earlier, with regards to the differences between the gimmick table culture between the USA and Japan, Myers made it clear with an example, quote, just lay all the merch on the table and leave an empty mayo jar. Someone just takes a shirt and leaves the yen in the jar. It's an honor thing. It blows me away. That wouldn't happen in America. I'm like, wow, that is pretty incredible. Like, I'm kind of shocked when I heard that as well. I was like, I know Japanese culture is very respectful, but I didn't realize it was as simple as you could do that. Like, I know Max Morrison kind of leaves his table a lot because obviously he has to prepare for matches and things, but I don't think people would take stuff off there necessarily. But yeah, trying to leave like a jar from, like, we know if there was a jar with money, somebody would steal the jar.
Oh, yeah,
it's not just the fact that you'd get a t-shirt for free or something, or you put the wrong amount in. The jar would not stay on the table. So I thought that was a really interesting one, but makes me love Japanese culture that little bit more.
When you went to get the Chinese food the other day, they told us,
yeah, someone stole the tip jar from them. Terrible. All right, match 5, Survival 12-man tag team match. This is the 44OH, the Atticus Koga, Bobby Beverly, Eddie Only, Eric Ryan, Gregory Iron, and Ricky Shane Page versus Team H2O, Chuck Payne, Devon Moore, Jimmy Lyon, Lucky 13, Ron Mathis, and Schlack. I already mentioned I thought there was way too many people in this match, which I took away my enjoyment from it a little bit, but go ahead, Mason.
Gregory gives Rob the DX symbol and then attempts to jump off of the top rope. But he didn't do anything to Rob before that. Like, he was just standing up there. Like, and so Rob just walked out the way, and Gregory just jumps onto the mat. Schlack does a suicide dive, which surprises me.
Why?
Because I don't really think of him as, like, a dive. Like,
oh, do you think of him just like a hard hitter?
Yeah, like a hard hitter, just grab a weapon and then hit somebody over the head with that. That's what I think of him as. Eric steps on Jimmy's feet because he has no shoes on. And Gregory and Eddie pull their trunks down to try and do a double stinky face. But Jimmy moves out the way, and they do a double stinky face to Ricky Shane Page.
That was my highlight of this match. Like, that I didn't expect. Like, at this point in the match, I was like, this is too many people. That actually broke up the match for me, in the fact that it added that silly comedy, comedic element, which I kind of needed for this one. And I didn't expect it either, which made it even better. Like, the one with the referee, when they set it up, like, I was like, all right, you can see where this is going. I legitimately thought they were just going to give him a stinky face. I didn't see that the, yeah, so I kind of like that.
Lucky 13 totally misses the backflip to the outside. And, like, he jumps and he's supposed to hit whoever was on the outside, but he totally missed. I think he should have just stuck with a regular dive because he just fell straight onto the grass. I mean, at least he didn't fall on his neck. That would have been bad. But, and the skewers got stuck in Jimmy's head. He got skewers stuck in his head.
Yeah, you can't have a deathmatch event without that happening at some point. That's kind of that's pretty standard.
It's Kogar's, like, M.O. now.
Yeah.
Not Kogar. Is it Kogar? Yeah, it's Kogar.
Mm-hmm. And they do a few slams on the head to make them, like, go deeper into his head. And I think it's... yeah, and after a frog splash, he still kicks out. Marcus King comes out and distracts the whole 440H. Was it?
Yeah.
I put 440. But...
Ohio's initials are... Oh, wait, sorry. Oh, so, yeah.
Oh, okay. 440 gets cleared out of the ring, and Gregory Iron is left with Schlack, and he makes Gregory Iron kiss his shoe. And then Schlack puts Gregory on his shoulder, and then Lucky 13 does a DDT off of it for the win.
Now, I know you said you had difficulty hearing the names, and I actually had Marcus Gray written down. You said Marcus King. Now, I'm not sure it's Marcus Gray either, but when I looked it up on Twitter, because I obviously always put plus wrestler, there was a broken Marcus Gray, but that's definitely not the person who interfered. So I was going to ask Ryan if he knew who that person was. The only other comment I did get while he's trying to think about that, Ricky Shane Page on Twitter, Jerry, I'm going to need you to edit this out of the VOD. That was the stinky face part. I did find that. There wasn't many things from Twitter normally, and I could normally pick out a few quotes. Not many people were really talking about it, to be honest. So, but no. Ryan?
Is it Marcus Crane?
Oh, that might be it.
I'm blanking. I don't remember, but he is an H2O.
It's the same kind of rhyming thing, Gray and Cray.
Yeah.
I think Marcus Kane.
I thought you said King. I'm going to say it wasn't King. Okay. All right.
In general, I agree. Too many people.
Yeah.
But this was also, I think, on a kind of a play on going into a big wrestling season, which is Survivor Series, and trying to mimic that. Because a lot of indie promotions, you know, a lot of indie promotions have Rumbles in January. A lot of indie promotions have, you know, Survivor Series style matches, team matches in November. It's something that happened. However, I thought that it was a good set of people. Like I said earlier, I'm a big 440 fan. Especially, you know, I've been a big fan of RSP for a long time. RSP being one of the co-founders of Beyond Wrestling. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a big Eric Ryan and Eddie Only fan. On the H2O side, I mean, Devin Moore, Chuck Payne, Ron Mathis, Lucky 13, you know, Jimmy Lyon, and then all of a sudden the mystery member is Schlack. Like, I love a good Schlack reveal, you know, because actually there is no reveal. There is only Schlack. You know, it's he's such an imposing force. And obviously, like, there's half of the wrestling community that says Schlack is one of these problematic individuals. There's the other half that say, no, Schlack's a, you know, pussycat. You know, it's I don't know what to believe because I don't know Schlack. I really don't. But he's a spectacle in and of himself, which I think is why he's had this longevity, but also why he's never going to be in AEW. He's never going to be in WWE because he's Schlack.
Yeah.
Lucky 13 is one of those, you know, just consummate professional veterans. you know, he's been around the block for many years at this point, and he's just awesome. Every time I see Lucky 13 come out, I'm happy. You know, he kind of reminds me, not only just because he looks like him, but the way he wrestles, of Jerry Lynn, which is a high form of compliment, in my opinion, because Jerry Lynn is one of the greatest of all time. Fun match. Just, once again, too many people.
Yes.
Too many people. And maybe they should have done it in a Survivor Series elimination style, where we would get down, you know, to... I'm just going to throw random. We get down to Lucky 13 and Ricky Shane Page at the end. You know, like, awesome. I would have been dead, because at least it would have given us a singles match kind of ending. It was fine. I thought it was fine, you know. And I hate to say this about this entire show, just as we're kind of going into the tail end of it. As a big H2O fan, this show, this show was fine. It was not amazing, but it was not terrible. It was fine. It had really great moments, which we're about to get to two of my favorite two matches, I think, are the final two matches. So
All right, let's crack on then. Match 6 was the tag team match. G Raver and Jimmy Lloyd versus Austin Luke and Marcus Mathers. Mason, we kind of talked about this one a little bit just off air ahead of time. Like, you know that I'm a big Marcus Mathers fan. That's one of those names that probably resonated most with me from the No Holds Barred Network interviews. Like, just to be so impressed with somebody so young to be so polished. I don't think I originally realized that he's a second generation wrestler. Oh, he might even be a third generation. His dad is definitely a wrestler. So I didn't realize that side of it to begin with. And that kind of obviously explains a lot why he is so polished. Did you get me to say the wrong name?
No.
Okay. I know you like to mess with me and try and deliver and try and get me to say the wrong name, but I've got this written down. Yeah. So no, once I knew, and because we talked about, well, you said you love the fact that Marcus had such a big match, as in it was the one right before the main event. And the only thing that's kind of surprising me, and like I said, perhaps I didn't have the commentary on, not a lot's being said right now about the fact that he holds the equivalent of the Money in the Bank. Like, he holds that, he has that right to challenge for the IWTV title. And since that's happened in August, like, I haven't really heard it mentioned. So we've had September pass, October's passed. We're in the middle of November, pretty much. It's been pretty quiet. I don't know if they're kind of trying to get away from that storyline. It almost feels like Otis right now. Like, he's got the Money in the Bank, but nothing's really happening with it. Like, they haven't really if they haven't thought of the next step. Like, they've had events at the H2O Arena as well, and you're thinking, oh, they're going to pull the trigger now. And no, they didn't pull the trigger.
I don't think this was the right time to...
Oh, I'm not saying it would have been in this one, but I'm just mentioning, as Marcus Mathers is in this match, I'm kind of was thinking something more immediate would happen. And right now, it seems almost like an afterthought. Like, I would want to see him walk out to the ring, raising it to remind everybody, hey, look, I have the Money in the Bank type thing. Like, I can challenge for the IWTV title whenever I want. But it's not even really being used as a gimmick at all. So
I don't want to see it on H2O. I want to see it on a different... That's a hot take, but I want to see it on a different organization, because I think that would be really cool, because if nobody knows who Marcus is, and then he comes out with the Money in the Bank and everybody's just really, really shocked on what that is.
Yeah, because they didn't see the event previously.
Yeah, yeah, I think that would be really cool.
I'm going to disagree. I want to see it at H2O. I wanted to see him cash it in immediately, which nearly happened at IWTV 100, except for a very professional wrestler came in and took him out. But, No, that's his name, a very professional wrestler. I'm trying to remember. It's one of the Hatfields. Is it Dasher Hatfield or Boomer Hatfield? I always get those two guys mixed up. But it was one of those originally, anyway. And, the pop was huge. We're like, oh, my gosh, Marcus is going to be the IWTV champion. And then they took it away from him. I want to see it at H2O, because I think those fans know who he is. And everyone's rooting for Marcus, like 100%. So I would love to see it happen at the H2O Arena for their fans to be able to see that, rather than at a different event. Like, for a World Series, you don't want to win it on the You don't want to win it when you're on the road. You want to win it in your own stadium in front of the fans. So
I would just want to win the World Series.
I understand anywhere. That, but if you have a choice between
two, if the Red Sox win and it's not at Fenway, you don't get that pop.
Nah.
Yeah, like
you want the home field pop.
2004 was different just because it was so long. But it took a little bit away from the fact that it wasn't actually at Fenway.
Well, it didn't matter who you were in 2004. You were like, oh man, they're actually going to do it. You know, I was watching baseball at the time, so it was extra exciting, you know, but it is one of those things. It's like, at that point, you just want to see them win. You're just like, okay.
Curse has got to end.
Just win. Even Yankees fans were like, finally, like, good job. Like,
the Cubs even more, too.
The Cubs even more so when they won it, yeah. But see, from my perspective, I was only a Red Sox fan for 4 years when they won it, so I haven't known any real pain except for Pedro on the mound in 03. But yeah, I've had 4 World Series titles in the 20 years I've been in the state, so yeah. But I understand for Massachusetts fans and Boston fans and people have had generations where they just haven't had a win.
We're raised to be like, you love the Sox. Uh-huh. They are the only thing that matters, but they're terrible and they're garbage and they suck. That was it was the underdog. And actually that's what led me to fall out of love with baseball, is we no longer had an underdog team. By 2007, when they won again, I didn't care anymore. Like, I remember watching it and being like, cool, we won. All right, there you go. You know, like, that was about it.
All right, Mason, tell us about the match.
Well, before the other week, Tom Brady passed, I can't remember who it was, for the most passing yards, and it was at the Patriots, and there was literally just a sign on the scoreboard. If it would have been in Tampa, they would have had a whole fireworks show.
I'm going to say Drew Brees, but I'm
not 100% sure. It was Drew Brees. I think it was Drew Brees. So let's get into the match. I can't believe I messed. I confused myself with Marshall and Marcus.
That's because you keep trying to do it to me every time we review one of his matches. You're right.
It's more of a tradition now.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus does a suicide dive into a DDT. I mixed up Austin and Marcus for the first page.
You're right. That's the first thing I wrote down. I put suicide dive into a DDT from Mathers. Absolutely loved it. It looked awesome. Like, I was like enjoying the suicide dive anyway, but then the combination of those two things together, it looked really good.
And then Gio Raver does a suicide dive to Austin. They're throwing chairs and ladders into the ring, and G Raver throws a chair at Marcus, and it lands perfectly. And Jimmy picks up Austin.
Jimmy Lloyd is one of the wrestlers in this match.
Wasn't he earlier?
No, that was
Jimmy Lyon. Okay. G Raver uses it. Jimmy picks up Austin, and then G Raver uses him as a springboard. Jumps off of Austin's back and onto Marcus. I thought that was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Austin slammed. Austin got thrown on a chair and it hurt his tailbone a lot. Like, that must have really hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And Marcus got a huge roundhouse kick, and Austin tries to suplex G Raver off of a ladder onto two doors onto the outside, but G Raver got out. And double knees Austin through the doors. Marcus gets brain busted and pinned onto the chairs, but still kicked out. And swung Tom off of the top by G Raver. And Marcus power bombs G Raver on a chair on top of a ladder. Like, the ladder was laid down on its side, but it was still really painful. And G Raver wins with a J driller. And yeah.
And then at the end, go on, what happened after the match?
And then Austin turns on Marcus after the match.
He did. He didn't really beat up on him too badly, I thought. Yeah. I was like, I would like to see you giving him a few more hits. But anyway, we got the point. You mentioned the perfectly delivered chair. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it was from last night. I don't know if you saw AEW last night, Ryan. I haven't, but I saw on Twitter. It looked like it was Matt Hardy and Orange Cassidy. And he's holding up the chair. You know how, like, they put the chair on their head? And he literally held the chair, and Orange kind of grabs it and then just puts it on his own head. The clip looked absolutely
terrible. Oh, no, the whole spot was terrible. and that's coming from, you know, an OG OC fan. Because yeah. I'm sorry. And just real quickly, I used to say, as much as I love Orange Cassidy and his alter ego in Chikara that we don't talk about, I always said, I was like, OC is going to be a star, but the orange, the freshly squeezed character is never going to translate long term. And now we're 2 years in.
Yeah, I love it.
It's I'm so happy that he's getting the recognition he deserves, because I know some people don't get it. Some people just do not understand, you know, oh, he's just a comedy wrestler. He can go. Yeah. He is one of the most talented people on that roster. So, and it makes it that much better, because when he starts going, you go, oh, what? You know, because he's good. He was, you know, I guess we can talk about it. I went to an H2O Beyond show where he wrestled twice. At one point, he wrestled as Orange Cassidy. And the other time, it was a Chikara showcase where he wrestled as Fire Ant. And I elbowed my girlfriend and I go, see the guy in the red? That's Orange Cassidy. And she's like, no, it's not. And then when he started wrestling, and his, you know how his skin gets really red when he gets flushed? Like, he just gets, and she saw it on his arm and she's like, oh my God, that is Orange Cassidy. I'm like, yeah, I told you. But he's doing springboards and he's over the top rope. And I'm like, he's one of the best professional wrestlers on the planet.
Yeah.
Never know. And that's what's brilliant about Orange Cassidy. But
yeah.
Sorry, yeah. I hear Orange Cassidy and I have to go into a rant.
I am always happy to talk Orange Cassidy. He's still, I still listen when he's asked, who's your favorite wrestler? I'm still saying Orange Cassidy. Like, nothing has dissuaded me from that at all. He's just so entertaining. And yeah,
he will be AEW World Champion.
Oh,
and if he's not, they have dropped the ball.
I don't think he needs to be, but if he did not, I would still be, I would be okay with it.
Think about how funny it would be, though. Think of the things he would do, being like showing up when he was IWTV champion. He would show up to the ring with his backpack and then just nonchalantly take the belt out. Like, yep, okay.
Yeah. Oh, it would be cool for sure.
A funny spot would be if the belt is just too heavy for Orange Cassidy, so they give him a mini belt. I would love to see
they give him one of the toys that you can buy at Walmart.
That would
totally work.
Yeah.
Now, there was one thing I wrote down in the match. There was a coast-to-coast. Now, my question is, I don't like seeing the coast-to-coast. Has Shane O'Mac ruined it, or is it just me? Like, as soon as I see a coast-to-coast, I always think of Shane McMahon now, and I, for that reason, I just hate it. So, I don't like Shane
first
McMahon.
And foremost, it is a Van Terminator. And that's it. The only person who ever perfectly executed that was Rob Van Dam. I know no one can see me, but I'm doing
it. We saw you do the RVD.
Yeah, thank you. Shane, it was really impressive the first couple of times he did it, but now where it's just one of his spots.
Yeah.
And I do want to bring up, for WWE, it is very impressive because they don't have a 16-foot ring. They don't have an 18-foot ring. They have a 20-foot ring. That is a long distance to go post to post. Whenever I see it in an indie show, I'm like, that's a 16-foot ring. It's impressive, but it's really not that far. You know, it's a lot easier to do. I think H2O, I think they even said on commentary they do an 18-foot ring. It's definitely bigger than a lot of the rings you see at a lot of indie promotions. But it is what it is. It's fine. But Shane O'Mac did kind of ruin it.
What's the hypotenuse for that?
18. All right, 18. This is going to be fascinating to listen to. 18 squared is 324. So the other side would also be 324. So if you add that together, that's 648. So the closest square root to that would be 625, which is 25. So the diagonal would be 25 feet. I have seen somebody do that diagonal, and that was very impressive.
Yeah, I think he did that once or twice.
I'm sorry, but the most impressive thing is that you were able to do all of that in your head, whereas I was, after you said 18 times 18 is, I went, I have no idea.
Square numbers are something. When we used to have to invigilate exams in England, like, you can't take, like, a book in or anything. Like, you've got to be, just concentrate on the people who are taking the test. You've got to be, walk around, see what's going on. We used to have to do this for, like, 3 hours at a time, and it's like, oh my God, I'm going to go crazy. So I used to try and either find like some sort of puzzle that could keep my mind occupied for a little bit, or after a bit, I was like, hey, well, I'm a math person. Wouldn't it be really useful if I learned all the square numbers up to like 100 so I could do calculations like I just did now? So yeah, it was something I learned 20 years ago and they just kind of stuck with me. I've always been a numbers person anyway, and number facts I can remember, but yeah, who won the last pay-per-view or who was on AEW last night, forget it.
Yeah,
my brain doesn't work that way at all.
Obscure pop culture references, I'm good. Yeah. I can do those all day long. I'm pretty sure it's almost ended my relationship multiple times because just as a little fun story, I wasn't feeling well a couple weeks ago and my girlfriend looked over to me and asked me, she said, are you okay? And I said, I don't know why. And she goes, you haven't made any stupid references in like half an hour. Because I do. Every actor I see, I have an anecdote about. Every song I hear, I have an anecdote about. I just know pop culture. I'm surrounded by pop culture at all times.
That's one of those memes. It's like a 90s song. Yeah, remember every single lyric to it. Important fact that I need to remember? Yeah, don't remember that. The brain is not very helpful with things like that at all. All right, I guess we should, not that I didn't enjoy this match, I really enjoyed this match. And I think you said it was one of your favorite two matches as well. Marcus as well, loved seeing it, absolutely. But I think we've got to move on to the last match as well. And match 7, the exploding barbed wire match, the thing that most people were going for. So not just Matt Tremont out of retirement, at Tsuchiya Onita. I'm looking at Ryan to see if I got that pronounced correctly. My Japanese pronunciations aren't always good. Whew, looks like I got that one okay. Mason, go ahead.
He came
away
with Chainsaw Tony.
He did, yeah.
Sushi.
Yep.
Match. As soon as Atsushi comes in, he attacks Matt with a barbed wire bat. Atsushi broke a steel chair over Matt's head, which I didn't like. Yep. Because it wasn't like that. He didn't wind all the way back, so it was a little obvious that it was unscrewed.
Oh.
If he would have rode all the way back, and then it would have went all over his head, and then broke. That would have been cool.
So the science of it didn't work. You knew for that amount of force wouldn't have had that type of reaction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Steel chair over Matt's head. And then light tubes. He smashed light tubes over Matt's head. And
stomach.
Yeah, and stomach. And then Matt smashes the light tubes over at Sushi's head and then carves into his head. Then he spits the mist in at Sushi's face. And then Matt got hit with a light tube to the stomach. Matt is about to hit Atsushi with the bat onto the outside, onto the barbed wire explosives, but Atsushi hits him with the mist, and then a few light tubes and bats, and then Atsushi finally pushes Matt off of the edge and the outside, and there's an explosion and a minute-long fireworks show. That I did not like. But, I mean, I liked the fireworks show and the explosion and everything. That was so cool. Uh-huh. And that was so awesome. But I didn't like that he just barely fell off. Like, he was holding on for, like, 20 seconds, and then he just fell off. I wanted to see him get hit with the head over a light tube or a bat or something and then just fall onto the barbed wire. I think that would have looked much cooler. But I don't know. What confused me was I thought that was the end of the match. I thought it was like once you got like thrown onto the explosions, there would have been a fireworks show. Atsushi would have celebrated and then won, but no, that's not what happened. And then Atsushi lit a fireball in Matt's face and he still kicks out. Atsushi turns on the sirens and then hits Matt with explosive light tubes. Like it's the same light tube, except it explodes onto like fire and stuff.
Okay.
And Atsushi gets a barbed wire and puts fire on it, and then, like, it takes forever to light, like, it lights pretty slowly, and then he puts even more gas on it, and then it just lights up way too much. And then Matt Tremont gets, like, thrown into it, and then, yeah, that's a 3 count easily, and then Matt Tremont has a smile on his face at the end of the match.
Yeah.
Like,
and we kind of hinted at Ata that he helped him up, and they were both talking on the mic, and I couldn't hear anything they were saying, but it was obviously mutual respect because it was the hug there. And
Matt Tremont's singlet got caught on fire.
They did have people there because we were worried about the apron earlier catching on fire. They did have people there with fire extinguishers, particularly for this match. They were very visible, and if it kind of got too much, they kind of sprayed pretty quickly and got in there. Yeah, I had a few things I didn't like in this one as well. Like, yeah, you can roll out one side of the ring and nothing happens, but if you were to roll out the other side, then all those fireworks would obviously go off. It did make me look forward for Guy Fawkes Night, though. I know you don't celebrate that over here, but yeah, Bonfire Night and Fireworks Night in England is November 5th. This was October 31st, so I got an early fireworks show for that. Yeah, the lighter didn't work. That's kind of an important part for this segment, and he just threw it on the ground. Luckily, somebody else had one, so they got it. But yeah, it did not catch on fire. It was just that tiny little bit. I was like, oh gosh, that didn't quite work as well as it could have done as well. Well, then he started throwing literal fuel onto the fire. So yeah, at that point it did. I was very disappointed in this match. If we'd have traveled 4 hours to go see this, and that was the one with the AEW though. The one that AEW tried to do, which was on a much lower level. Like it didn't work on many different levels, and this one to me didn't really work either. This was not my favorite match at all. Like, even the parts before this happened, I think were much better. But yeah, the end, the fireworks, did he really need to go for a minute? Like, I didn't see the point of that. I was trying to look like where Matt rolled under the ring or something, but you couldn't see from the camera angle, which I'm sure is deliberate, but I don't know. But I didn't see the point of the fireworks, though, because that wasn't an explosion. It was literally, like you said, a fireworks display.
Yeah, I think that should have ended the match.
I would have been happier if that would have been the end of the match. I would agree. I would have been happier with it.
Yeah, but I loved the end of the match anyway. But I didn't like at Sushi's part. Well, I don't really know him. So to me, he was just the person doing the damage and not taking anything.
Well, he had a few minutes, but I was waiting for you on this one because you told me you'd done some research on him. So I was like, all right, let's get straight into the match then. And you can tell me about all you know about him.
By research, I looked it up on YouTube and then saw they had a few other matches before this. And I was thinking about watching Matt's documentary, I think it was.
There was. I didn't
watch it, but
I did.
I planned to.
That was kind of what wanted me to go to see this event. I haven't seen that.
It's because I found something that looked more interesting.
You know, we have somebody who knows all about both of these characters well, though. So if we shut up, we can actually get something a little bit more insightful. He's just taken a little drink as well to wet his palate. So we're nearly 2 hours in. So bring it on. This is the reason we got you in. We know you know about Matt Tremont, and I could see even through a tweet your eyes light up once we mentioned that we were thinking about reviewing an Onita match. So go ahead, tell us all about it, Blade Jump.
So let's go back to the beginning.
So, you got time to go get a drink now as well. If you want to go get your lunch and then come back, that'll be okay. Ryan will still be talking. I will stay here though, okay?
When back in the day, before the WWE, or before IWTV, before any of this, there was a thing called tape trading. And that's what we had to do, is people needed to make copies of VHS tapes of wrestling, and you would buy them or trade for them or whatever you had to do.
That's what Chainsaw does, yeah.
So early on, back in the day when you couldn't just stream everything, High Spots was the go-to place for finding tapes online. And I discovered FMW, mainly for Hayabusa. Hayabusa was one of my favorite wrestlers. And that led me into the first time I ever saw a match like this was, I might get the teams wrong because it's been a while since I've seen it, but I'm pretty sure it was Hayabusa and Terry Funk versus Mr. Pogo and Masato Tanaka in a exploding barbed wire match. And I said, what? Because the concept was foreign. Fast forward to AEW's exploding barbed wire match.
You got air quotes there for the
benefit. Yeah, I think there should have been air quotes around barbed wire too, because I'm pretty sure it was snipped barbed wire, but that's neither here nor there. And I was very excited to see a legitimate death match on national pay-per-view, you know, national television, a mainstream wrestling organization doing something like this. They'd done barbed wire, they'd done thumbtacks, they, you know, they'd done hardcore, but this is another level. And then they, we all know what happened. So then,
Mason shaking his head.
Tremont and Onita say, hey, we're going to do it right.
Yeah.
I enjoyed this match. However, there were a lot of things that left me disappointed. I think they overpromised and underdelivered.
Yeah.
I think it was good for what it was. I think it was for a guy who hasn't wrestled in a year and is not, you know, no offense to Matt. I love Matt Tremont. Mm-hmm. Isn't in the best shape of his career. Mm-hmm. And a guy who is 62, 64.
Really? Oh, I did not know that, or I'd forgotten.
Onita is...
I thought 53. That's what I was thinking.
Onita is 64.
Wow.
So, you're going into... This is Undertaker Goldberg territory.
Yeah.
You know, it's two people who... And Tremont's only 32.
That was one of the things I had in my notes, and if you hadn't have said it, I was just about to ask Mason, how old do you think Matt Tremont is? Because I was thinking, because obviously if he's retiring, I'm thinking he must be like late 30s or something. I was thinking 39 was what I was thinking in my head. And when I saw that as well, I thought it was 33, so I was a year out, but I was like, oh my gosh.
He could be at this point. But you got to think, he spent his career primarily doing deathmatch.
Mm-hmm.
That puts a lot of wear and tear on your body.
Oh, sure.
So you got two guys. And once again, he hasn't wrestled in a year.
Mm-hmm.
He's got ring rust.
Mm-hmm.
That was my initial thought, is just, well, Onita's not going to be able to move. Tremont already has issues moving sometimes just based on the injuries he sustained over the years. But there's going to be explosions, so it'll, you know, the spectacle will overshadow the shortcomings. So first and foremost, you take down no ropes. All four ropes were up, which I did not agree with, because traditionally in this style of explosion match, the side with the, usually there's two sides with beds of explosions, and there's no ropes on that side. Mm-hmm. So you can go right over into it. The other ropes are typically taken down, and barbed wire is strung up also with explosives in it. So when you hit the barbed wire, that also explodes. So the first thing I noticed was they just wrapped the ropes in barbed wire, which I'm not a huge fan of, which they really barely used. It was for aesthetics.
Yeah.
Like, I think maybe at one point one of them got like their face rubbed in it. And I think that was the only time they used that barbed wire. Secondly, the second thing I noticed was there was no explosives rigged up to the barbed wire ropes.
Mm-mm.
Okay, fine. It is what it is. Now, you probably have seen the video. You mentioned, you know, Tremont finally rolling off into the explosion. If you saw some of the videos going around on Twitter that had a better angle of it, he was firmly in the center of that explosion when it went off.
Oh.
He did not get under the ring before that explosion. He fell into the explosion. I believe...
it looks like you're looking for it then.
Yeah, well, so I'm not going to find it.
Isn't he actually in hospital for, like, burns?
He is. He has third-degree burns. Tiffany had a video of it on her page. Now she posts 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So it might be hard to find, but, you know, it's somewhere where you can find that. And he was dead center of explosion. Ooh. So, and I noticed that because at first when the fireworks display was over and he rolled out from underneath the ring, I was like, oh, I thought the same thing. Oh, he bailed. He bailed on the explosion and it went off and whatever. And I thought the black on him was just from like the ash from the fireworks.
Yeah.
No, that was charred flesh. I think that was the first thing that was going to put him in the hospital.
Yeah.
The finish with the barbed wire board obviously was the thing that definitely put him in the hospital because he was on fire.
Yes.
And that's it. I was never properly trained. I wrestled for a very short time for an organization that had no business running because it was not safe. the guy was a trainee of the New England New England Pro Wrestling Academy. I believe he was training under Brian Malonis at the time. I'm not sure. And he had no right running an organization because he barely knew what he was doing. And he was the one who was training me. So I, being the smart person I am, decided, oh, well, I'll just do hardcore then. Because you don't have to really be good sometimes. You just have to do dumb things and have a high pain threshold.
Yeah.
I did barbed wire. I did fire. I did all that kind of stuff. I have never seen someone that engulfed in flames.
Yeah.
That made me nervous. I don't think that spot was done well. I think it would have been better if they had the board up on something and he went through it, because that would have dispersed the flames. Since it was flat, though, he just went into fire and fire remained.
There was just too much fuel put on there. Like, it's because it didn't catch initially. And to make sure, I think they were trying to make that look much better. And I think Anita just went too far.
I agree. I really do. The exploding light tubes, though, I will say, was a nice surprise. As soon as he picked up the bundle and I saw the wire running from it, I got very excited. Mm. Because I've never seen that before. And honestly, it looked really, really cool. This is the only rating I'm going to give during this conversation, obviously, because it's the last match. I give it a 6 out of 10. It was good. It wasn't great.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think it taught me is that what Tremont is doing is the right move. He's spending less time putting his own body on the line and more time creating the next generation of deathmatch wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
Onita needs to do the same. And I think what would have been better would have been either a tag team match, or which is funny because there was way too many of those, or a match with two up-and-comers with Onita and Tremont in their corners, getting involved just to, you know, do their thing, get their spots in.
Yeah.
But I think the evolution of the exploding style death matches, I think it's time to pass it off to the next generation. That's what I believe. Because there's still a spectacle. You can go on YouTube right now and you can find Onita when he was younger, much younger, versus Terry Funk in an exploding barbed wire death match. And that's the spectacle I wanted to see. What FMW was doing in the 90s and the early 2000s was essentially, to me, the Japanese ECW. It was giving you world-class high-flying and technical wrestling mixed with the most violent, sadistic style matches you could ever think of. What H2O is doing is kind of the same thing. And I thought H2O and FMW would give us the perfect storm, and it really didn't. I just think Onita's age and Tremont's ring rust led to just a okay match. Still better than AEW's.
Yeah.
But I was disappointed, but I wasn't disappointed in the sense of I walked away from the show thinking, well, this was a waste of time. Mm-hmm. I was disappointed because my expectations were too high. And honestly, that's my fault. I should have known that a pushing 70 and a guy who has retired was probably not going to be the match in my imagination. It was good. And now Tremont, I don't know if it's because of this match or just because he already had this planned, but Tremont is now having another match against Ricky Shane Page for the H2O title in a no rope barbed wire. I think that is much more in line with what he can do right now. I don't, and Ricky Shane Page can carry him all the way if he needs to, because Ricky Shane Page is that damn good.
Mm-hmm.
It was disappointing, but I saw a lot of people on Twitter being like, you know, that sucked. It didn't suck. It just wasn't what you expected. So.
Yeah, like I say, I built it up. I was super excited by it. I was prepared to travel 4 hours to go and see that and 4 hours back. And yeah, it was like, this is such a unique match. You might never get a chance to see this on American soil. Like, this is the first time running. Like, we've had that chance. So I think, I agree. I think we all built this up out of proportion. And yeah, like I say, we've been chatting about it for a while. Like, it was the first, just that first match I didn't particularly like. But when I went back and watched the rest of them, yeah, they were enjoyable. My favorite match was definitely Marcus Mathers. Without a doubt, that was my favorite one.
Yeah.
Thank you for being on this season. We hope to see you next season.
Oh, right, Ryan. This is an MGB tradition. Ryan's the only person, with the exception of us two, who's been on all 4 seasons. I don't even know if Jackson's been on all 4 seasons, to be honest. I know he sometimes makes a little cameo, but as far as I know, Ryan certainly. Yeah. Thank you so much, Ryan. We really appreciate it, and we look forward to talking to you again in season 5.
Oh, absolutely. We, you know what? And we can do it more than one season too. Like, I mean, it's fine. I don't have my own show anymore. So sometimes I just need to let loose. And I don't even know if any of my co-hosts are alive anymore. I mean, we obviously know we lost Joe Nolan in that terrible, the terrible pizza factory explosion. But you know, Scott, I think, has kids or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
And who knows what happened to Tommy Collins. I think he's on the Patriots now. I don't know.
I know you've been very gracious, and I know you've always said if we ever need you for anything, that you would always drop whatever it is to appear on our show. And we really appreciate it when you do that as well. There are certain things that we can bluff our ways through. There are other things when we really do need that expertise. And whenever we need you for that, we know that you'll always do it. So. We certainly appreciate it.
And it's always my pleasure, because it's always a good time and it's always interesting. And I like that. I've been on plenty of podcasts, but this is the only one I think I've been on multiple times.
Well,
I'm hoping to change that with I'm hoping Why We Watch comes back eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I think I was on that twice. I'm not sure, but...
Let's put it this way. You'll definitely be invited back onto Good Cop, Bad Cop as well. I know you appeared on my birthday episode because I was requesting, I wanted a special guest. I said, Matt, the person I want more than anybody is Ryan, because it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and we don't do it anywhere near enough nowadays.
It's true.
That'll guarantee that happens. All right, I'm going to click in stop, or else this will go on for another hour.
Music was Zigzag by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. https://creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0/